Letters.
On India, Starbucks, African farmers, electoral systems, behavioural economics, and conferences.
Bear hug double standards.
From Saket Gokhale MP, Rajya Sabha, Parliament of India, Delhi. You ran a story on the meeting between Narendra Modi, India's Prime Minister, and Vladimir Putin, Russia's President. Article Bear Hugging Bros, July 13th. Just before the meeting, Russia launched missile strikes across Ukraine, including on a children's hospital, killing 44 people. Every sincere person would condemn this brutality and unprovoked attack by Russia on a sovereign nation. You then said Mr. Modi still went ahead with the meeting and gave Mr. Putin a bear hug. Yet, how many times have Western leaders given bear hugs to Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister, while Israeli forces bombed civilians, including children, in Gaza and did not spare hospitals? What we in India fail to comprehend is the double standards of the West, where Mr. Putin is seen as a violent renegade, and rightly so, but where Mr. Netanyahu's constant violations of human rights in Palestine are not only excused, but also supported and condoned. Until Western countries condemn Mr. Netanyahu in the way they have done with Mr. Putin, their claims of being concerned about the Ukraine war on humanitarian grounds will fail to cut ice with those of us in non-aligned countries. Ethics demand that what's bad for the goose must also be bad for the gander. Bear-hugging Mr. Netanyahu while condemning Mr. Putin reeks of hypocrisy.
Cafe Tales.
From Kevin Peterson, Miami. For all of the neighbourhood innovation that flows from opening a Starbucks, article The Frappuccino Effect, July 6th, it is worth noting that its Frappuccino is itself a product of local innovation that its founder once doubted. Starbucks gained the rights to the Frappuccino when it bought Coffee Connection, a rival chain in Boston, in 1994. Coffee Connection's founder came up with the drink after a trip to the West Coast, where local baristas blended frozen, frothy coffees fit for a hot summer's day. He rechristened this drink back on the East Coast as the Frappuccino, combining the familiar frappe milkshake with the foreign cappuccino. Although it was a local hit, Howard Schultz, the founder of Starbucks and a coffee purist, wasn't a fan. He wanted to get rid of it upon acquiring Coffee Connection, but the drink had already become too popular. Today, cold drinks now make up around 75% of the company's beverage sales.
African farmers and the EU.
From Paul Stewart, Global Coffee Director, TechnoServe, Arlington, Virginia. The Economist was spot on in warning that the European Union's new deforestation regulations will shut out African smallholder farmers from European markets, not because they are cutting down forests, but because they cannot prove compliance. Article Unintended Consequences, July 6th. We train rural traders in Africa to collect EU-compliant farm geolocation data, but with tens of thousands of small traders and millions of small farms, the task is immense. Smallholder farmers are already poor and have to pay costs for repeatedly collecting these data each year. There is a better solution. The EU should clarify its position on the territorial approach, which is when entire regions are declared free from deforestation, and actively encourage it. This would encourage collaboration between the private and public sectors to stop deforestation, rather than simply redirecting commodities from deforested land to other markets. European coffee companies have called on the EU to delay implementation. That may be necessary given the general feeling of unpreparedness. Delaying the imposition of fines would give the EU, commodity traders and governments time to test efficient systems that stop deforestation and don't harm farmer incomes.
First past the post rules.
From Joshua Wine, Gibraltar. The ability of the first past the post electoral system to deliver decisive victories to centrist parties is a feature, not a bug, of Britain's electoral system. Article, Disproportional Representation, July 13th. Systems of representative democracy exist to alchemise the diverse will of the people into a coherent and stable governing authority. Since the people's will is varied and the will of the government must be singular, a process of compromise and coalition building is required. Under proportional representation, voters do not need to compromise. They have a very good chance of finding a party whose platform closely matches their views. The task of compromise is delegated to the politicians they elect, politicians whose survival depends paradoxically on their fidelity to the narrow sector they represent. Such systems inevitably struggle to deliver a stable or coherent government. In FPTP, political success depends on appealing to a plurality of the electorate. Parties cannot pursue narrow agendas without dooming themselves to failure. It is the voters who are forced to compromise, for they are not offered parties that perfectly match their views. A winner-takes-all system is most valuable for diverse societies. Instead of appealing to narrow interest groups, our politicians are compelled by their own self-interest to build platforms with at least some appeal to Brexiteers and Remainers, Muslims and atheists, workers and bosses, country and town. By rewarding moderation and punishing parochialism, our system stabilises our politics and our society.
Association fallacy.
From Robert Cecchio, Dunellen, New Jersey. Kelly Clancy suggested that the role of psychology in decision-making, especially in economics, should be dismissed as one of the least reputable fields of science. Article, Everything to Play For, June 22nd. That might come as a surprise to the members of the Nobel committees who awarded the prize in economics to John Nash in 1994 for his pioneering analysis of equilibria in the theory of non-cooperative games, e.g. game theory, and to Daniel Kahneman in 2002 for having integrated insights from psychological research into economic science, especially concerning human judgment and decision-making under uncertainty. Neither man suggested that behavioral economics provided a complete representation of how everyone made economic decisions, but instead provided a framework for understanding how those decisions were made. I think the Nobel committees knew a little something about the subject matter, perhaps more so than Ms. Clancy.
Working conferences.
From Rob Shelton, Palo Alto, California. Bartleby, article July 6th, provided essential strategies for surviving and enduring conferences, and pointed out that for many people, the primary benefit of conferences is networking. However, for many people, networking is only one letter away from not working.